Blog Talk Radio.
Boss Lady Publishing.
Capri. I hail all the way from North New Jersey. I'm the author of the Pussy Trap series, Trust No Bitch series, and my latest book under G Street Chronicles, Tainted Lies, Fear, and Death. You can holler at me at NeneCapri.com. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram as Nene Capri. I'm coming to a library near you. Trapping.
Yes. Welcome, everybody. It is Tuesday night. My name is Tony, and we are coming to you live from the scoreboard on Real World Radio. We are your radio tailgate party, presented by Nene Capri. It's been a minute since we've been on the air. I have missed you guys. So much has been happening in the sports world, and we're going to get all caught up when the guys get into the clubhouse. But in the meantime, and in between time, I'm going to go ahead and introduce myself, get the show started, get the bills paid. Because, you know, the guys, they just slide in whenever they feel like it. But somebody got to be here to pay the bills. Once again, you listen to the scoreboard. My name is Tony, and I'm going to be joined shortly by Mr. Jazz, as well as Mr. Louie Mack. Now, here on the scoreboard, you know, we are presented by the one and only boss lady herself, Nene Capri. Now, some of our sponsors for our show include Nene Capri Presents. Now, she has a lot going on in her camp. Some of the things that are first and foremost is her magazine. That is the Iron Throne Magazine as well. And some more sponsors include The Grit Network, 1K Media Group, Media Vision 848, and Young Urban America Group. And my baby, if you want that A1 editing to your manuscript, Book Bite Editing. So be sure to pick up some heat by Nene Capri. She has some fabulous. And her chapters are waiting for part 5 to drop of the P-Chat series. Now, in addition to that, you can get her book on Amazon, Nook, Audiobook, and everywhere books are sold. But she is known worldwide as the Pussy Drop Lady. She has parts 1-4. Part 5, like I said, will be dropping soon. But make sure you're caught up. And in addition to that, she has the Trust No Bitch series. Y'all can tell I haven't been on the air in a minute. I'm tripping over my own words. The Trust No Bitch series that she co-wrote with the one and only Cash, street lit author. She also has Dreamweaver, Diamonds, Pumps, and Glocks. Yes, she co-wrote with a beautiful author. So make sure you guys pick that up. Now, under Nene Capri Presents, we have The Wrath by Rance McNeil, Senseless by the beautiful Imani Hilton, and D.B. by S. Camillion. Make sure you guys head on over to pick that up. Once again, you're listening to the Scoreboard Sports Show here on Real World Radio, presented by Nene Capri Presents. And it looks like I got one of my guys in the studio already. It must be about 8:03.
Yeah.
Hey, Jazz, how you doing, buddy?
What's happening, baby? You're okay. First of all, I only did this because I knew. I wanted to see just how much fire you was going to spit at me for being 803. So I figured, you know, let's see how much fire you got inside of you tonight.
Man, it's been a minute since we've been on. I have missed you guys. I have missed our listening audience. I've been talking that smack.
Yo, it's hard, man. Everybody can't take it, so it's hard.
Absolutely. Jeff, how you been since we've been on the air, buddy?
I've been good. What's going on with you?
I've been busy. You know, no grass grows under my feet over here in the Tony camp. A lot going on,
yeah.
Like I was telling you earlier, but... You know, let's start off our show because this is your favorite segment
okay.
as we start off the scoreboard. Talking about that sport, I'm going to be able to just contribute to this boxing. What's going on in boxing? You know, I've been taking notes.
Well, okay, let's be clear, people. We've been gone for a month. A lot has happened. Okay, first thing, pretty sure for people who paid the $100 to see the Floyd Mayweather Conor McGregor fight, I'm glad that you spent that money, but I know at the end of the month when your cable bill come, you might be a little tight. But for people who didn't see it, if you was under a rock or out of the country, Floyd Mayweather beat Conor McGregor, knockout, 10th round. 50-0, you know, best record ever in boxing. To win your first 50 fights, undefeated, 50-0. Congratulations to Floyd Mayweather. Honestly, I wouldn't have counted this because Conor McGregor's not a boxer, but they sanctioned it. It counts, people. It counts. The second thing we missed was Terrence Crawford won his fight against Ndongo. I forget his first name, Ndongo. And don't get me wrong, Ndongo... He tried to do it. It was at 140. He tried to do it. But, you know, Terrence Crawford was significantly larger in size, and he knocked him out in the third round with a body shot. Nothing against Ndongo, but he wasn't going to win that night, dude. Terrence Crawford is a superior athlete, and at this point, he has already announced that he's moving up to 147, people. So for you Danny Garcia fans, you Keith Thurman fans, your old dude coming. And, you know, y'all might be a little worried right now. The third thing we missed was Adrian Broner had a fight against Mickey Garcia. Broner lost, and he looked bad losing. He might need to retire because he's fighting at 140. 140 is a weight that he had some knockout power at. He didn't even hurt Mickey Garcia, let alone knock him down. And Mickey Garcia was coming off of a 2-year layoff. So, Broner might need to reevaluate his career choice, maybe start promoting like Floyd. You know, maybe that AB could really be about billions because right now it looks like with his latest couple of fights, he's in the thousands. Then you have Lomachenko. Lomachenko fought ESPN. Worldwide, this is the first time Lomachenko has fought on national TV besides HBO fights. Looked great. He was a little too showboaty for me because that's not the way he usually fights. He was a little too showboaty for me, but he, you know, knocked my man out in seven. Actually, dude didn't even come out for the eighth round. Then, on top of that, the John Jones fight happened, which is John Jones versus Daniel Cormier. The fight for John Jones is redemption. He's going to put it on him. He put it on him. Put it on him. Beat him. Had Cormier crying in the ring. The grown man literally cried in the ring. But guess what? John Jones got caught with a banned substance in his drug test.
He's
probably going to be stripped of the belt. And if the second sample comes back positive, not only is he banned from the UFC, not only is he, not only will he be stripped of the title, but he'll be banned from UFC competition for 3 years. You understand that John Jones is not young, and Cormier is not either. So 3 years, I'm pretty sure Dana going to lose his number after this. It's done. It's a wrap. You know, you let him come back, and he made a ton of money between, you know, with the John Jones, Daniel Cormier. Wonderful, wonderful card. You know, UFC, wonderful card. But, yeah, I'm a little disappointed that he came up dirty after the drug test. But and for people who are before, because I know we never coming back to this, this weekend, Chocolito, Roman Hernandez, call him Chocolito. I'm pretty sure if you follow boxing, you know who he is. He has a rematch coming up this weekend against the cat that they say beat him, but in my opinion, Chocolito won that fight. But they have a rematch this weekend on HBO starting at 9 o'clock. Check your local listings, but I think that it's on Saturday night, 9 o'clock. Check that out. That's going to be a nice one. And it's an all-featherweight card. So it's an all-flyweight card. So every fight is flyweight division. It's going to be a good card because the flyweights, they throw punches. Real talk. So, all right, that's all I got.
That's a lot. What do you mean that's all you got? Before
you missed a lot.
You ask me when you're ready. Just press the button and let me know when you're ready. Load.
Dude, we missed a lot, dude. We was gone for a while, dude. We missed a lot.
We did. But you know what? I needed that break. I was also gone for a couple weeks from my other show on Thursday night. But
look,
I wanted to weigh in on this Crawford.
Okay.
Because, you know I was back and forth with you that night. I think
absolutely.
I surprised you by saying that I was actually watching the fight.
Yeah, I was a little surprised.
But that was, I'm like, why is everybody actually watching boxing? But the Crawford fight was great. I inboxed you about that body shot that he gave him.
Yeah.
It
was incredible.
He just tumbled like a pile of bricks. So
yeah.
And I know we also had to talk about Triple G. You didn't even bring up Triple G. Let me find out.
Well,
what's going on.
We still got next week. So that's a next Tuesday thing. I had so much to talk about today. I didn't even want to mention that. That's next weekend. You know, so we still got next Tuesday to chop that one up. You know, to chop that one up and get it ready for the mix. But yeah, the Crawford fight was a great fight. He got all the belts.
It was.
And like I said, he already said, you know, there's nothing else for him at 140. He's collected all the belts. He's trying to do what Triple G is. He's trying to do what Triple G is trying, but hopefully what Triple G would do next weekend, which is collect all the belts. He wants them all. Now he can move up to 147. Right. They've already said that Terrence Crawford, his first fight at 47 may be for a belt. It may be his fight may be against the winner of the Jeff Horn Manny Pacquiao fight. So if that fight happens, that fight's supposed to happen later on this year. If that fight happens, the winner of that fight will probably fight Terrence Crawford. And then Crawford will have a belt. Then he could talk to Thurman. But Thurman, I don't believe that Thurman will take the fight. I believe that Thurman going to make him wait a little bit because, you know, Thurman's a Heyman guy and Crawford's a Bob Arum guy. So, and, you know, one thing about Heyman controls 147. So if he wants a Thurman fight, he's probably going to have to fight Sean Porter first to get that Thurman fight because Sean Porter has to fight Keith Thurman later on this year. That's the one fight I do not want to see. And I love boxing, but I don't want to see that fight. That fight's trash.
Really? Really?
Yeah, that fight's trash.
So
I've already seen it. They've already fought before.
But who do you think has that edge, Heyman or Crawford? Who has that edge in that fight? Who would you be going with between the Heyman and Crawford?
I want to see if his power translates to 47. He has devastating power at 140. We all saw that in his last fight. We all saw that. But everybody who moves up to 47 power doesn't translate, the power to move up with him. Adrian Broner, when he moved up to 47, no power. Dropped back down to 140.
Definitely, I got punched, you say.
Yeah, you need that. I mean, you don't, you know what, I'm going to say this, and this is for people who watch the Terrence Crawford fight. You also got a chance to see Shakir Stevenson, the young man out of Newark, New Jersey, who had his first fight on national TV. He looked good, but he didn't have a lot of pop.
Yes, he did.
But he didn't have, he didn't, he was hitting my man with the shots, but he wasn't, dude was still standing there. So for some people, you need that pop, because going the distance is great, but people don't want to pay for going the distance unless you're Floyd Mayweather. Other than that, nobody wants to see you go the distance. They want to see knockouts. They want to see excitement. They want to see a guy on his back at the end. And, you know, you got, I got a chance to see Shakir. My second time seeing him fight, he had a lot of improvement between the first fight I saw and this fight. But he still needs to develop a little pop in his, a little pop in his punches to get the elevation to get a title shot instead of getting a title shot because you're managed by Andre Ward and Bob Arum. So we'll see how that goes. I think that he's a Roc Nation guy, actually. I think Stevenson is a Roc Nation guy because I know Andre Ward is a Roc Nation guy. So, you know, but back to Crawford. I mean, Crawford at 47, if his power translates to 47, I think he could take it. I think that if his power comes with him at 47, he could take all them belts too. I think he could be. I think he could take all the belts at 47, straight up.
Didn't he have all his belts with him in the ring that night? He had when he had his family come up. That was a lot of belts, guys.
Yes, and 47. Wow. I mean, you still got. Like I said, he could. The only trouble that I see at 47, if he takes his power, is Keith Thurman, because Keith Thurman does have some pop. But Keith Thurman takes a lot of. He does take some shots. Keith Thurman punches to give some. And if Crawford power translates, Thurman going to end up on his back, because that man fighting left-handed, right-handed, he could do it both ways. He got all the tools. Don't get me wrong. He got all the tools. If his power translates, he might even go up. If he has power at 47, I'm going to say this now. If he has power at 47, the way his build is, he might be able to go all the way up to 160 and go middleweight.
Wow. 160.
Absolutely. I think he can move up. I think if he keeps his power, because he's so young, he could go 147, 154, 160. I think he could do that.
Wow.
If he keeps the power. Because he's young. I mean, he's not old. He's young. He's like Canelo. I mean, think about it. Most people don't realize Canelo, he fought Floyd Mayweather almost 4 years ago. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
That was 4 years ago. So in 4 years, Canelo understands what it's like having the big stage, the pay-per-view, carrying the card. He understands that. When he fought, and you know, for people who have said to me that if they fought again, Floyd would win. I would tell you now, if Canelo fought Floyd today, Canelo would butcher Floyd in 9 rounds. I'd give him 9.
Taking some notes on Canelo would be, Louis, when you're ready, question one, buddy, and I'll bring you in on this conversation. But I had taken notes on Canelo and Triple G. I wanted to make sure I was ready for you. Hey, Louie, how you doing, buddy? Welcome back to the show.
I'm good. Life is
What's
good.
What's happening? What's happening,
hey,
baby?
We're here talking sports. Granted, you know, we're talking boxing, but, hey, it's something.
Hey. We're going around the world, baby. We're going around the world.
Hey, that's fine. I'm just listening and learning.
Absolutely. But that's it. I just gotta talk about Triple G just for a few minutes, guys, because I've been waiting.
Okay, do your thing. I mean, we're gonna do it next week. Do your thing. What you got for me?
But how do you see the fight? I mean, and that, for those that may not be aware, the Triple G fight is the weekend after next, if I'm not mistaken, the 16th. That's Saturday. Right. Okay. And
yes,
he is fighting. Who,
guys?
Let our
listeners
know who he's fighting.
He's fighting Canelo Alvarez.
Right. And I think Triple G is gonna have to go into the ring just to show Alvarez who's boss. He's a bigger guy. I mean, who are you going with? You going with TG or are you going with Alvarez?
You know, I'll be honest with you. The one thing about Triple G is that Triple G, he's 35. That's first off.
Right.
He's 35, and he's never been in the position where Canelo has been. So he's never been on a big stage, pay-per-view, the lights are on, it's time to get it on. You know what I mean? He hasn't been there. Canelo's been there three times. So,
okay.
I give Canelo the edge on that because he's been there before. But I mean, like I said, like I tell my coworker at work, I can never bet against a man who has broken another man's fate. Triple G broke Cal Brock's fate. I'm sorry, I can't bet against that. I'm sorry. I mean, it's not easy.
That's pretty sound logic.
I mean, he broke a man's face with boxing gloves on. He had boxing. It's not like he hit him straight up with the knuckles. He had boxing gloves on. So when you could command enough force to break a man's face, his orbital bone to be exact, I just can't bet against you on that. I mean, you have superhuman strength.
I mean, it's like no.
I mean, I can't
bet against him. I'm with you there, Josh. I'm with you there. But just my little take on it is that Triple G has to go into it showing who's the boss because he is the bigger guy, but he can't take these steps back. But Canelo has to go toe for toe. And I take Triple G in 11 rounds. That's my take.
Wow. Okay. Okay. So next week we're going to come back at this, and I'm going to remember this, and we'll see if during the week of preparation, you know, because you're going to hear a lot of talk during the week about it, and we'll see if you still have the same conclusion. We go with that?
Okay.
Now I wanna change subjects real quick. Now that I have Louis in here, Louis, you gotta tell me why are the Dodgers slumping, man? What happened?
I have no idea. I couldn't tell you. It just seems like it's one of those things that every team goes through this. Like even if the teams aren't that good, like the Braves earlier this year, the Twins earlier this year, the Brewers for a while, like teams that shouldn't have been competing were competing because they were just playing above their head. The Yankees are going through a similar slump, and they've started kind of ticking back out of this.
Mm-hmm.
You had a lot of guys playing out of their heads, a lot of guys playing way above their pay grade. You know, Alex Wood was pitching like he was a Hall of Famer, which he's never done that before. You know, Rich Hill was really good, and now he's kind of slowed down. It's just one of those things. It's a perfect storm that it seemed like everybody was hot for a while, and then they were able to balance everybody not being hot anymore, and now everybody's kind of gone cold all at the same time for them. And, you know, for Dodgers fans, you're just kind of hoping that they all kind of get clicking and getting on the right page by the time October comes around.
Can they survive this?
Oh yeah, I mean they're so stupid far out in front of the, like I mean, they're going to make the playoffs, no doubt. I mean, they'll more than likely win their division, even with all the recent struggles. And then, like I said, you know, you just got to hope that, you know, the season's winding down. You just got to hope here in the next week or two, but really by about the end, you know, in the next couple of weeks, you kind of want Bellinger and Seager and some of those other key offensive people kind of start ticking in the right direction. Alex Wood kind of get his head on back right. Rich Hill get his head back right. Clayton Kershaw start, you know, getting back into the mix of things. And you just got to hope that here in the next couple of weeks, everybody kind of starts ticking back up. So that way, when you get to the postseason, everybody's not in a slump and you start coming out of it.
So now, Miss Tony, I'm going to ask you the same thing. What happened to the Yankees, dude?
Well, the Yankees are going through their slump. But, you know, I'm not really concerned because no one ever thought the Yankees would be where they are this season. This was not the season for them to do the things that they're doing. But they have started to come back. You know, Judge is kind of coming out of his slump. Tanaka is pitching well, you know. So Sanchez has that suspension because of the fight. But, you know, this is a game year for us. So I just hope that they can pull it out, and I think that they can.
Well, I mean, they're 2.5 games out of first place in the East right now and 3 games
right
of – in the plus in the wild card race. So, I mean, they're looking real good for a playoff spot right now. Like Tony said, this wasn't supposed to be their year. Aaron Judge wasn't supposed to be this good. Gary Sanchez wasn't supposed to be this good. Greg Bird was supposed to be the best young player on their team this year, and he spent the entire season hurt. So, I mean, you got a lot of young guys that are playing above their head, and now some of the veterans are starting to catch up to them. They're in a good spot. I don't see them making a deep, deep run come playoff time, but, I mean, they'll make it. They're going to give their young guys some experience of what October baseball feels like, and they keep growing and, you know, building on. And, you know, the next thing they got to work on is that starting pitching rotation.
Well, they'll buy that. So, you know, they're good. I mean, so now, if that's the case, then – so, okay, I'm going to ask you guys a question, and I want you guys to honestly answer for me. Can Stanton catch Barry Bonds' record?
For a single season or a career?
Single season.
Okay.
I mean, he got like, what, 62 or 63?
He's at 53.
53, I'm sorry.
Yeah. And let's see, 53 – they've played 137, so there's less than 30 games left. I mean, he's going to have to hit 21 home runs in like 26 games. So
well,
it's possible. I don't think it happens, but it's possible.
I mean, I watched them throw grapefruits to Barry Bonds. Big old grapefruits. Big.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying, though, but the Marlins have less. The Marlins have, like, 25, 26 games left, and the single season mark is 73. So if Stanton is sitting at 53, like I'm pretty sure he is, he's basically going to have to hit at least one home run in every game for the rest of the season, which, I mean, he's been on a tear lately. That's, like
yeah.
I said, it's very possible that it happens. I don't see it happening. If he wanted to catch Bonds, he needed to get hot like a month earlier.
I go with that. Yeah, I can go with that. Yeah, you're right. You crushed my hopes. You're right.
I want to see Barry Bonds lose his record too, but I just don't think it's gonna happen this year. Now we know what a healthy Stanton can do. Like, this is the first time in a long time that Stanton's been healthy all year long. So we can finally see what he does, see what Judge can do if he can stay consistent and he can figure out some of the holes in his swing. He could probably come close to. There's a good chance that Cody Bellinger, there's a good chance that maybe one of these young sluggers coming up takes that race for 74, and we get to see another home run race like we did with Mark McGwire, Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, and King Griffey Jr. that year.
Well, I mean, my thing is not about about Bonds having a record. But my thing is, you're talking about a guy who hit 52 right now. And they also talk about when I trade him. I'm like, dude, you got 52 home runs and you trying to trade him?
Well, you're trying to trade him because you're paying him $18, $19 million for the next 13 years.
Okay.
He signed a ridiculous like 15-year, $300 million contract. The new Derek Jeter and the new ownership don't want to deal with it. That's a huge handcuff to have when you're trying to rebuild a team and rebuild a culture, to already have that money every year spent. So you get rid of that money, and it opens up what you're allowed to do and what you can do.
Yeah.
That's all there. It's not because he's not worth the money. It's not because he's not good. It's because you got a new ownership group coming in, and they want to do things their way. Giancarlo Stanton's not their way. Same thing when you have a GM come in. He comes in and fires people, moves people around, trades people. It's just not his people, so you want to bring in your people.
I mean,
huge paycheck out. And just back to his home run, you know, he did have a home run streak of at least six games, home runs in six straight games. So it's possible. It's hard, but it's not impossible. You know, so it's going to be interesting to watch. And it's also interesting just to see where he ends up, you know, once the new regime comes in and if they're able to move him with such a large, you know, chest around his neck, literally.
Well, the other good saving grace for him is, I believe, in 2019 or 20, every year starting in 2020, I think it is a player option to the next year. So he could opt out of his contract as soon as 2020 and try to get paid again. So the Marlins, the new ownership might hold on to him and tell him, like, we can't trade you, but if you want to leave, as soon as you have a player option, you need to opt out of your contract because with the amount of money we're paying you, we can't trade you right now.
Yo,
but
you
Louis,
look at –
but also, Louis, with that – I'm sorry, Jazz. With that 2020 option – with that 2020 option and the new regime coming in, that's still a long time trying to rebuild and still have that chokehold on your phone.
Oh,
you know, it seems like it's not that far, but it really is in baseball time.
Oh, and especially, like, because it averages out to $25 million a year, but I think the way they structured it is it was actually like $12-13 million the last couple of years, and then this year was like 14, next year is like 16. Like, it builds up to the 20-something million. So, like, it's a really weird – it's just not something a new ownership wants to deal with, and I don't blame Jeter and them for wanting to get out from underneath it because, I mean, you're paying a dude $25 million a year for 53 home runs. I mean, you're paying them $4 million per home run, basically.
When he's hitting it.
Oh. Yeah, when he's healthy.
Okay.
I'm not gonna
argue. We're talking about a league that has no salary cap. You can play players whatever you want.
But okay, hold on.
Okay.
You have what's called a soft salary cap.
Okay.
Like, the reason the Yankees have turned their tide into we're not going to overpay for free agents, we're going to rebuild, is because the Yankees for the next like two or three seasons, because of the A-Rod deal and the McCann deal and all those other deals, they're still paying luxury taxes.
Yeah, true.
Like, there is a threshold that if you're above it, you have to pay luxury taxes into the pool like the NBA teams do.
Exactly.
But there's no cutoff. Like, there's no, this is how much, you're allowed to spend as much as you want over that if you want to spend the money, but you will get taxed for it. So it's a soft salary cap, not a true no salary cap would be spend as much money as you want and no penalty. So there is a penalty for owners paying that much money for their players. The Yankees and the Red Sox are dealing with it right now. And you see both of them are trying to maneuver back contracts and get back underneath that threshold.
Right. And also with the mention of the Yankees, the newer Steinbrenners have taken that to heart. You know, it's not like the Yankees are just throwing money to the wind these days. They are really, you know, being mindful of what they're playing their athletes. And it's not like when George Steinbrenner was in control So the younger Skybrenners are keeping that in mind closely on how they spend that money.
That was a big stink with the A-Rod contract was the Yankees were trying to force A-Rod into retirement. So A-Rod, because if A-Rod filed paperwork for retirement, they don't pay him anymore. That contract's null and void. But A-Rod refused to sign the retirement paperwork because he wanted his money. But the Yankees wanted to not pay him so they could get under the salary tax. So.
Right.
So.
Because,
so are you still with the team in the NL? Who you got? World Series. Before the playoffs even start.
Oh.
Give me a team.
Oh.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. Okay. Wait. Here's what we'll do. Because I know I kind of slid that in on y'all. So I'm going to give you a week.
Okay.
And then next week, y'all come back with your NL and AL picks.
Oh, I'm going to have an AL pick.
So we need to pick the teams that are going to be in the World Series?
Whatever teams that are going to be in the World Series and teams to look out for, who you think might come creeping in a little bit.
I mean, I'll go ahead and give it to you.
No. We got a whole lot of other shit to cover. We good.
Okay.
Next week could be great.
Okay.
So real quick, I want to ask you guys about two things. First thing is, is anybody aware that the WNBA playoffs started?
I was not aware.
Yeah.
I was not aware, but did you know that you can play as WNBA teams on NBA Live 18?
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Word?
Girl, power.
That makes sense. Well, they're probably figuring out that, girls spend money.
Yeah. I like NBA. NBA Live hasn't been as a high quality game as the 2K series has been lately, but like the 2K series lets you be like the Euro basketball teams, like all those teams that like Ricky Rubio and them came from. So this is kind of like the NBA Live answer to it is, they're gonna let you play as Euro teams. Well, we're gonna let you play as WNBA teams. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of reviews the WNBA girls in the game get.
It's about time. I mean, it's about time. I think it's well overdue. And the second thing I have for you guys is any opinion about the Kyrie Irving trade? I'll like that for you and let y'all.
I not only do I love the trade for Boston, I think it turns Boston into the – instead of it being the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Warriors for the next 6 years or however long, I think it's going to be the Boston – it'll be Boston and Golden State for the next couple of years, depending on where LeBron goes after he leaves Cleveland.
I like it for the NBA.
I think we're about to see a whole another level of Kyrie Irving. I think Kyrie Irving's about to take his game to the level that we all thought he should be at. I mean, granted, he's only like 26, so I mean, he's still growing and he's still learning and he's still maturing. I think he's about to take his game to the next level and become one of the elite superstars. And now Boston has an elite superstar point guard. And Kyrie to go along with Gordon Hayward and some of the younger guys that they got. And I think they're about to become a team to be reckoned with for the next handful of years.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's just say he has given me even more reason to hate Boston.
Wow.
he just reignited that emotion within me because, like Louis said, I think you're about to see Kyrie takes his game to the next level. He's out of the shadow of LeBron James. He's able to just step, reach into his repertoire and just show the world what it is that he can do, and not just as a result of the best player being on his team feed him the ball.
Okay. You know, of course, I'm going to disagree with both of y'all.
Yeah, because you're a Cleveland homer. You're a Golden State fan, but you're a LeBron James homer.
I haven't figured this one out yet. Let's be clear. Let's be clear. In 2 years, Boston got to pay him again. Now, let's look at contracts real quick, real quick. In 2 years, Horford is going to be making $32 million. Haywood's going to be making $31 million. And Kyrie going to look at them and say, yo, you want me to make less than Al Horford? No, I can't do that. I could leave.
Look,
I see him leaving more than I see him retired.
We said that about KD. Going to we were all flabbergasted that he'd be willing to take a pay cut to stay in to go to Golden State, and then flabbergasted on how big of a pay cut he took to keep up with them so that they could keep that core together. It's a different league. I think KD and the Warriors have sparked a change in the league, or at least free agent wise. I think we're going to see a lot, instead of everybody getting maxed out to the everybody getting a max deal. I think we're about to see only one or two people per team have a max deal and everybody else be playing under that, because everybody's going to have to play with three or four superstars to try to win.
But remember, KD went to a team that already had won a championship. It was on the cusp of going back to back. He's going to a team that was the second best team in the East. Even with the trade, they're still the second best team in the East. And without the bench, they may be a third best team in the East.
No, I think in a seven-game series, they can beat Cleveland.
They can't beat Cleveland?
You're a crazy person. They can't beat Cleveland.
Right now, they can't beat Cleveland. I know it's been a month since we've been on air, but come on now. They can't beat Cleveland. I gotta agree with Jazz.
Cleveland is a better team now, but on that take about finances with Kyrie not wanting to take a pay cut, you know, KD took a pay cut, but he was holding the championship ring in his hand when he took that pay cut. Kyrie doesn't, you know, so he is not at that level where he can say, I'll take a pay cut.
I think everybody's about to start taking pay cuts. It doesn't matter if you got a ring or not, because in order to beat Golden State, you've got to have a team of three or four superstars of your own to even get in the same building as them.
Yeah, I gotta agree with him on that.
But you can't have that team with more than two or three people making max money. Look at the Heat when LeBron was there. They had too many people making right under max money.
Yep.
That team fell apart.
You're right.
Still, even Cavaliers right now had too many people making right under max money. That team is falling apart. You can't do it anymore with three or four people making max money, because Golden State's changed the game.
Well,
You have to have a foundation. You have to have a foundation to legitimately compete for the championship. Not just like the New York Nets. Just say we're going to take less money so we can make the championship. You have to have a legitimate team that's actually going to beat on that court at that time. Before talking about taking a pay cut.
I believe Boston has built that core. As long as Jason Tatum is what we think he is in the next couple of years. As long as Gordon Hayward's game doesn't change too much to move into the East, as long as Kyrie makes the jumps in this game that I think he'll make, and then they still have so many draft picks that they can go get an Anthony Davis if they want, they go get a Kristaps Porzingis if they want, they go get a DeMarcus Cousins if they want, or they can draft them themselves, they have the core to put together, to build a team basically like the Warriors did. We're going to draft most of our people and then bring in two or three superstars to kind of, you know, take us to the next level. That's what's happening in Golden State. Boston's trying to imitate that.
Okay, so let me ask you this. In Boston, now remember, last year, Kyrie played with LeBron James. I'm asking you two questions. Who do you think took more shots?
Is it cheating if I already know the answers to these?
Well, then you answer it.
Okay, I know the answer to the first one. I don't know about the second one since you haven't asked it.
So the answer to the question is, who in Boston is going to make him take less shots? Because not going to be Steven. Who's going to say, Kyrie, you're taking too many shots?
Oh, okay, so the answer to your first one, Kyrie took more shots than LeBron did.
Three times as many shots.
I get that. But what I was saying is we're going to see an evolution of Kyrie Irving's game. Was that year that he spent in Duke before he got hurt, he was a scoring playmaker. He was not afraid to dish. He was not afraid to – he would pass, shoot, whatever he needed to do in that possession for Duke to have the best look, he did.
Okay.
Since coming to the NBA, especially with the crappy Cleveland teams that he was a part of before LeBron came, graced us with his presence back in Cleveland, he had no choice. He was the only offensive option, so he had no choice but to become a score-first type player. And then with LeBron likes to hold the ball in his hand all the time and be the playmaker. So Kyrie just turned into really a glorified Klay Thompson. Like, he basically turned into a Klay Thompson.
He turned into Carmelo Anthony. If you give me the ball, I'm shooting. Basically.
Right. But a part of what Kyrie has said and his reasoning to want to leave Cleveland is when he said that he wanted to be the man, he didn't say, I want to be the man like LeBron James is the man or KD is the man. Like, you know, I don't want to be the face of my team. I want to be the playmaker. I want to be the primary ball handler. I want to be the floor general. And I think since he's going to get that in Boston, you're going to see him dish the ball more and willingly give up shots to Gordon Hayward, Jason Tatum, Al Horford and the rest of those guys in order to keep them involved. And, you know, that's where I think the next step of his – when I say he's going to take the next step is he's going to embrace some of that playmaking and that ball control and be a much more willing passer.
And can I just want to add to that, because I agree. And when you say that, and what I see is that Jason Kidd game. You know, he was the ultimate floor general. He got everyone involved. He fed that hot hand. So I see him going to that next level, because I Jason Kidd, you know, when he's on the floor, you just felt like you had an additional coach on the floor. So I see him setting up his team, being that leader, and not necessarily being the face of an organization like Louis said.
He's never going to be the playmaker and the floor general that, like, Magic Johnson or Jason Kidd was. Like, that's not his game. But he's going to quit being such a Russell Westbrook-style or James Harden, Chris Paul-style. Like, you know, he's not – he's going to be a much more willing passer and a much more willing floor general. So he's going to go from being a shoot first, pass second, to more of a balance, just kind of what the defense gives you. He's going to be okay only scoring 12 points and having 20 assists if that's what the team, the defense is giving you. And then there's going to be games where he's going to go off for 40 and only have like 6 or 7 assists.
Okay.
But the correlation I was trying to make is that he's going to be the play. I'm sorry, Jazz.
Yeah.
Is that he's going to be part of the playmaking and not being on the other end of someone making his plays. You know, not necessarily being like Magic or like Jason, but still having that opportunity to run the floor, being on that floor and set his teammates up.
Okay. Now, people. We are at that time in the show. It's time to get it in. Okay.
Uh-oh.
First question.
Oh, jeez. Uh-oh.
Is Le'Veon Bell pissed off? Now, because is he pissed off? I mean.
I love Le'Veon Bell. You see that man fill out an application for Dairy Queen?
Yeah, the Dairy Queen joint. Yeah, no. mean, can Pittsburgh re-sign him? I mean,
I think he feels slighted I think he's more slighted on the length of the contract that they wanted to give him, not the yearly average. You know what I'm saying?
Like, okay.
Because it seemed like to me Pittsburgh didn't offer him a 4 or 5 year deal like he wanted. They were offering him a 2 or 3 year deal.
Yeah,
and he got
they wanted to give him a
3 year
deal.
Because if he wanted out of Pittsburgh, he could have tried to leave Pittsburgh, but he didn't. He could have.
$12 million to stay in Pittsburgh.
Only because it's a franchise pending.
That's what I mean.
But if he
wanted
to, he could have went and shopped his services around to try to see if another team would be giving him his 4 or 5 year deal somewhere close to the money that Pittsburgh was going to pay him. I think he wants to stay in Pittsburgh. I think he just wants a long-term deal. And if he can stay healthy and on the field for, 14 to 16 games this year, he'll get it.
Okay. What do you think, Ms. Jones?
Jones with Dairy Queen. That's just...
Yeah, it's great. It's great.
I love it. I love it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just like sidetracked. You threw me there. You gotta let me know when you're bringing that up into the show, then. You just threw my rhythm all off.
I'm sorry. My bad. Logical question, though.
I didn't even think what Louis was talking about because I was just sitting here thinking about ice cream.
Dude, could you imagine going through your local Dairy Queen drive-thru and seeing Lady on the aisle taking
can't.
Money at the window? That'd be the greatest thing in the world.
Oh my God. Dairy Queen, stop with it, please, though.
Oh, no doubt. Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, I think that if I'm Le'Veon Bell, the only slight I got is the fact that you gave Antonio Brown his money. Where mine at? That's my only slight.
Right.
You gave Antonio Brown his money early.
So now
I got to wait for mine.
I think the only reason he doesn't have his money is because he hasn't played a season with more than, 12 games in a year in his career. Granted,
okay.
He's been super productive when he's on the field. Like, he's probably the best running back when he's actually on the field. But when you can only be on the field for 10 to 12 games a year and they're paying you 16 and the playoffs,
Teams start getting
a little weary about giving
any
money on that one.
While we're talking about the Steelers, I can't wait for Mr. Green to get up on here when the season starts. How do y'all feel about it? I think they are set to take it this season. Don't underestimate. Mr. Green going to have lots of clout to come in and talk about the Steelers this season. I don't know, guys. How do y'all feel about them?
I'll say this. They'll win their division because their division is so weak that they could trip over it and win it. But
would you think
when
that's
it comes
the only reason
come,
that they're going
to
win it?
Yeah, everybody, come on. Baltimore has no quarterback, and they lost 3 offensive linemen to injury. Cincinnati don't know what they're doing. Just Marvin Lewis should be fired, and Cleveland. They did cut Osweiler, and
Cleveland's showing promise, but they're still Cleveland.
Yeah, I mean, and they cut Joe Hayden, but where did he end up at? In Pittsburgh. So, dude, how is that productive? He's still in your division. And now you got to see him twice a year.
Hey, guys, just opening up a quick tangent right here because I just got the breaking news.
Uh-oh.
Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott's 16th suspension has been upheld by an arbitrator.
Yeah. Of course, Goodell was going to do that. I mean, you thought Goodell was going to
do that. Breaking news.
That's an independent arbitrator. That's an independent third party that upheld that ruling.
Louis.
Okay. Let me
news,
I put independent third party in air quotes.
Louis, come on. We've had this debate.
But what it means, though, is more than likely we're about to see a Tom Brady thing happen again. Ezekiel Elliott and the Players Association are about to take the NFL to court, and it's,
of course,
and it's going to get ugly, and then Ezekiel Elliott's going to end up serving his sentence anyway because the NFL Players Association is useless.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I just think I want to let you guys know that it's more likely going to court now.
Well, then let me ask you this. If you're Dallas, do you let him just go ahead and sit out the six, or do you let him play?
If I was Dallas, I don't know, man. If I'm Dallas, I want Ezekiel Elliott on the field. So I want him to fight this. But this is going to be over their heads now for basically until it gets – because as soon as he files the lawsuit and gets into all of that, like, it automatically freezes any suspension so he can play again. But it's going to be over their heads and looming, and everybody's going to be talking about it constantly. So I don't know. It's kind of a catch-22. Like, you kind of want them to go ahead and get over it. But in order for the Cowboys to be as good or even as close as good as they were last year, they need Elliott on the field for all 16. So
yeah,
I don't know. It's kind of a catch-22.
You know it's the NFL. So even if you take the NFL to court, the NFL is going to fast-track it. Which means, let's say they have the hearing. Let's say you let him play. And they have the hearing in week 11. They uphold a suspension. So now he got to miss the final four games. Let's say they tie with the Giants at that point. Division lead.
Mm-hmm.
They lose the last four. They get knocked out of playoff. And he still got to serve the first two of the next year.
Of the next season. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'd rather just eat the first six. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
Looking at their schedule, I could eat the first six and still win the division.
Well, in my opinion, McFadden and Alfred Morris, the year before they got Ezekiel Elliott, showed that with that offensive line and in that system, they're decent enough running backs to keep your running game going.
Absolutely.
I'm with you. They just said that Ezekiel Elliott's eligible to play week one versus Giants due to timing of decision. I don't get what that means.
Well, it just means that because they filed the paperwork. Because they filed the paperwork, that means that once they filed the paperwork, that the suspension can't be, what do they call it? You can't enforce the suspension because it's going to court, like Tom Brady. Like you said, it's just like Tom Brady. It's like an injunction. They mean injunction.
No, it's saying that right now that because that hasn't officially happened yet, that because of how late the decision came out for the Ezekiel, the
makes
upheld,
sense. That makes sense.
Now, it basically turns his suspension from week two to week nine
to seven.
Instead of week one to week seven.
Yeah. Cause I mean the finals were supposed to come out last week.
Right.
I don't know, man. This is crazy.
It's crazy,
but,
dude.
But with Brady last year, I mean the court ruled that because of the way that the collective bargaining agreement was written and how it
Absolutely.
Was stated. Is that Roger Goodell could do whatever he wanted to, so they
Absolutely.
Can't get involved in all that. So, I mean, even if you let Ezekiel Elliott take it to court,
still
he's going to get the same result. So he's going to still end up serving a six-game suspension at this point. So I'm with you. I tell Ezekiel Elliott, no, you can play week one just to make sure you look right, but you're not playing the rest. You're not playing until it's done.
Yeah. Go ahead and get them six out the way, dude. Because I'd rather you do the six early then do the six late, because I'm going to need you late.
That makes him six games fresher than everybody else in the league.
Absolutely.
When it comes time for that playoff run.
Hey, remember, 2 years ago, when Peyton was having them arm issues, sat his ass out for 4 weeks, brought him back. He was fresh enough to get him through the Super Bowl.
I hadn't thought about that. I mean, especially, like, I mean, to me, his only hope was to not serving time was this arbitrator holding, you know, overruling it. Or at least
that's not gonna happen. Yeah, it's not gonna happen.
But I mean, at this point, like, it's gonna be six games. It's not gonna be anything less than six games. So you might as well just get it over with.
Eat them early. Just eat them early, dude. Just eat them early,
I would just tell the NFL, like, look, he'll still sit out week one if you'll count it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm good. I mean, okay, let me ask y'all. Bigger injury, Tannehill in Miami or Edelman in New England?
Tannehill in Miami, no doubt.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Why? Why?
Because one, the Patriots system has been known, because Patriots are known for taking guys who aren't superstars and turning them into superstars. Do you know what position Julian Edelman played when he got drafted?
Yeah. Who was he?
He was a quarterback. He got drafted out of college as a quarterback, then got moved to safety. He played 2 years at safety and then got moved to wide receiver. And
okay,
now he's been what? So, and between the acquisition of Brandon Cooks from New Orleans,
yeah,
Chris Hogan, Danny Amendola, Rob Gronkowski, there's enough weapons.
And remember, yesterday they picked up Dorsett.
And they just traded Philip Dorsett for
So they just traded and got rid of Brissett. So
there's enough weapons in New England to survive Julian Edelman. I mean, they might miss his leadership and his scrappiness, but his actual playmaking and his production on the field, they'll easily be able to replace that. Ryan Tannehill was their only shot at being especially when you come out with Jay Cutler.
Why wouldn't that
knee injury be addressed during the off season though? You know, it's just like I don't understand
what you mean?
That.
What do you mean?
What?
Was it addressed during the off season, the Tannehill's injury?
It was like the second week of training camp. He got hurt. He tore his ACL scrambling in practice.
Yeah.
Trying to make a play. Go 110% at all times, and then you pop an ACL, and then your team's left with smoking Jay Cutler. Oh, boy.
Okay, we're going to have some fun. Who's going to run for more yards? Who's going to run for more yards? Eddie Lacy or Marshawn Lynch?
Can I take option C? Look. Do you remember Jerome Bettis the last couple of years of his career? Like that year that they won the Super Bowl, the man had
absolutely.
Like 37 attempts for like 40 yards and like 26 touchdowns.
Yeah.
That's what both of them are going to be. Both of them are going to be like goal line, just get us 1 yard and let's play. And if it's, don't fumble it, we're going to get into the end zone and move on with our lives. Because watching those two run this preseason has been hysterical. Cheeseburger Lacy and Old Man Lynch.
And Miss Tony, did Gino make the squad? Did Gino make the squad? Is Gino Eli's backup?
Man, you know how I feel about Gino.
Hey, he's your guy now. He's a giant.
No, he's not my guy.
Dude.
I don't even want to see him on the field in a giant uniform.
Hey, he's listed as the Giants' backup quarterback on their 53-man depth chart.
Look. Let's give a hand to Gino now. I got to admit. Anytime you can turn his film into a job, I ain't got number but respect for his whoever represents him. I need that person in my corner.
Right.
Because that person is the truth.
The next time I'm up for a promotion at work, I'm going to call Geno Smith and be like, hey, man, let me give that number to your agent.
Yeah,
bro.
Let me get the number to my man. Because, dude, he keeping you working. So I know I'm going to be management soon. Ain't no problem. So, okay, how many games before Deshaun Watson is starting in Houston?
Six.
Okay. What'd you say, Ms. Tony?
That's a good number, six.
I like six.
That's it. I'm
six is good.
Yeah, I like six.
I like
six.
Six gives them enough time to look at Tom Savage and go, oh, yeah, there's a reason we signed Brock Osweiler instead of letting
But does Watson propel them to the playoffs?
I think he does. I mean, they were a pretty good team last year, even with Brock Osweiler not being able to throw the ball past 2 yards down the field.
And they made playoffs last 2 years. They won a division.
And Watson is a very good, deep ball thrower. He's got a very nice deep ball. And that's where their best weapon and DeAndre Hopkins, that's where he thrives at. Is he's a good deep ball, go get him type of receiver.
Okay.
So, I don't know if that time at Clemson overlapped either. I want to say they overlapped a year, so they kind of have a little bit of chemistry, too. I'm not 100% sure on that one. But I think Watson gives them a better chance of winning and being competitive than Savage does. But I understand that Savage has been there. He knows the system better.
Yeah.
You kind of got to give him a chance to fail before throwing Deshaun Watson to the Wolves.
Do you agree, Ms. Tony?
Mm-hmm. But I also want to ask you, how have you guys watched in the preseason the new quarterbacks? How do you guys rate them? I mean, are you surprised, disappointed? How do you guys – did you watch any of those games?
You talking about the rookies?
Yes.
Mitchell Trubisky's looked pretty good. He's looked a lot better than I gave him credit for. So, in Chicago. But he's not starting either.
Mm-hmm.
He's not starting either. Obviously, Deshaun Kizer did really well because he's going to be the week one starter. And he looked pretty good. He looked like he's got good chemistry building with Corey Coleman. Deshaun Watson looked really good. He looked poised. He looked like he could handle it, but again, I understand them wanting to give Savage a chance. So, the rookie quarterbacks have looked about as good as, a lot of people said they would. Trubisky and Kizer really being the surprise, pluses.
Mm-hmm.
And, this was a really weak quarterback class to begin with. So, I don't think anybody really expected too many starters out of this class right away.
Well, I agree with you on Trubisky. Only thing I didn't like about Trubisky was they never gave him a lot of reps against first-team defenses. But I understand he's a project, so I can understand that. I like Kizer. I think Kizer will be starting week one.
He is starting week one.
Oh, so they've already confirmed it. Yeah, so, that makes sense to me. Who I think who looked really good? He's not a rookie, but I like the way Goff looked with St. Louis.
Jared Goff looked like he's taking 4 steps forward in the offseason.
He looked good. I was like, and the thing is, they gave him a weapon with Sammy Watkins. If he could stay healthy, you've given him, you've upgraded over a Kenny Britt. Now you've
And the other part of that is it moves small playmaker, speedy Tavon Austin back into the slot and 3-1 set. So now you put Tavon Austin back where he feels more comfortable. So you, I mean, I'm not saying Tavon Austin's going to be a breakout, you know, superstar, or breakout player this year, but we can see an uptick in production out of him too.
Well, they need it because they paying them, you know. Paying them a lot of cash to be a return guy. So,
Tavon Austin and Geno Smith, the pride of West Virginia University.
Yo, do you? Wow. So,
but
do you? Okay.
Talking about, go ahead, Dan.
No,
go ahead. I was going to say, talking about quarterbacks, you know, here in New York, the Jets with their quarterback situation.
Oh, God.
With Josh McCown, have you guys watched him play? Josh, what is this? Josh McCown?
McCown.
If I'm speaking truthfully to Jets fans right now, you need to go start watching film on Josh Rosen and Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen of UCLA and the quarterback at USC of Southern California, because that's going to be the next quarterback of your future.
Next season is supposed to be quarterback rich as far as, you know, coming out of college.
That's only if Josh Rosen and Sam Darnold leave early. Like, they're both juniors, so they can both stay one more year.
Yeah.
But the early prediction is that they're going to leave school early and go, and they're going to be – I mean, Josh Rosen is probably – they're both pretty close to NFL ready right now. Like, they're not going to get too much better this year. Like, they're not going to learn too much more in college one more year.
But they got to be better than Josh McCown. He's 2-20 in the last three seasons.
No. Is it Josh McCown? Is it Josh McCown or Luke McCown?
Josh McCown.
Is it Josh? Okay.
They got to be better than what they have right now.
I was just asking because there's two McCown brothers. One's been talking around the league, and one's been Drew Brees' backup for the last 6 years.
Yeah,
now,
that was Luke.
He
was smart.
Josh McCown.
Yeah, Luke was smart. Luke said, "Yo, I'm good." and when this goes down here, I'm retiring. I'm going to do a Jesse Palmer. I'm going straight to the booth.
Exactly.
I mean, he has no decision making. He has no arm strength. He's not comfortable in the pocket. Come on. And he has a starting TV job at the New York Jets.
But that's been Josh McCown's MO. He's going to go be the starter for a team that's not ready to compete this year, but they need a veteran under the other center to kind of either teach a young quarterback or be a placeholder for a young quarterback. And then he signs a 1 or 2 year deal, and then when that team finally gets their quarterback of the future, he moves on to the next one.
So
Jazz, both of you, what can he teach an incoming quarterback?
He could teach him how to break a huddle, because obviously Hattenberger can't break a huddle, so he gonna teach him how to do that.
We can joke that he's not physically gifted as many other quarterbacks, but the dude's been in the league since.
Yeah.
I have no idea. I don't remember when he got drafted. Like,
2002. Okay, and what does he have to show for it?
I mean, he's played for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 different teams.
He knows systems.
And how many years?
That's what I'm saying, though, is intelligently in his head, he can probably be the best quarterback in the world.
Absolutely.
He probably knows how to do it. He just physically can't do it. That's why he keeps getting jobs.
Wait. Think about it. I mean, I'm not making fun. Let's think about it for a minute. The best coaches were not great players, but they had the brain. They could teach it. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? I mean, you look at the you know, Andy Reid, you know, Gruden. Gruden is saying a heartbeat. I can't do none of that, dude. But I'll tell you what, I could teach you how to do it.
Well, Jim
he
Harbaugh,
probably
Jim
one
Harbaugh
of them guys.
Jim Harbaugh was a journeyman quarterback in the NFL for a couple of years. But now he's
absolutely
one of the he took a bad 49ers team within like 2 years to the Super Bowl, made Colin Kaepernick a superstar for a year, and now he's got Michigan football back on the map after only being there for
and remember,
two teams. Like, knows how to coach.
And remember, that was after he did the same thing at Stanford. Remember, Stanford was the star.
Yeah, and making Stanford, you know, legitimate. So
relevant.
It's one of those things that some guys can play and some guys can coach. He might be one of those guys that he's going to end up being a great coach or a great NFL analyst on ESPN one day because he understands the X's and the O's. He just physically can't get the ball to the right read.
Look, let's get clear. Trent Dilfer was dog food before he got to Baltimore. So again,
wow!
And now he got a ring. He got a ring and a TV job. That's McNabb. That's what he can give you. Because why? Because he can see it and he can say, "Yo, he was supposed to do that. I couldn't do that pass. But this guy's 19 years old, fresh out of college. He makes the throw.
Right.
That's the read. I just don't have the arm strength to get it there." Nothing wrong with that, because if you've got the intellect, you keep a job. Because if he's been through 11 teams, that means he's probably learned 11 different systems. So ain't no system you can put him in that he doesn't know a little bit about.
It's been 10 NFL teams. The Jets are his 10th NFL team, and he spent 1 year in the Canadian Football League. That's the other team.
Ain't much that man ain't seen. I'm good with that.
That man's been around since the wishbone was still being run.
You know what I mean?
When professional teams were still running the triple option.
See what I mean? Dude, that's knowledge right there. They ain't much. When you get on the field and they look at him, he's going to be like, look, I remember back in 01, we was in the same situation, guys. That's what we did. You know what I'm saying? And talk him out of it. You know
what we're going to do.
No. Okay.
Oh,
who is are the Falcons over the Super Bowl?
Probably not.
You don't think so?
Yeah, that's what, you right there in Atlanta. What's the fear on them? Oh no, not talking about the Falcons.
The fans feel over it is that we put the Super Bowl behind us after it was over and that we're ready for, you know, the next challenge. I don't think they're over it quite yet because it's kind of hard to be over something without playing like a game for real, like and getting that taste out of your mouth.
Yeah,
and getting like I think once they get that first W, which will probably come week one against the Bears, like once they get that first W and kind of get that feeling of, okay, this is a new season, it's a new grind.
Yeah.
You know, last year doesn't matter. I think they're going to be all right. I think, you know, I think they'll get over pretty quickly, and it won't get talked about much until they make the playoffs again, and then it'll get brought up of, oh, do they, can they handle, you know, the biggest choke in Super Bowl history? Like, is it going to cost them a playoff game or something?
Well, now,
I know we only have a little bit of time left, and the season starts on Thursday. It's going to be interesting.
Let me ask you this, because I noticed we have a couple of fans from that are, you know, San Fran loyal. So, let me ask you guys. What do you see in San Fran? Do they get the – can they beat – are they expecting to beat the Jets for the top pick, or are they trying to actually get better?
I see, like, 6-10, 5-11, somewhere in there.
Okay.
I think they're going to compete because I don't – Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch don't seem to be the type of people that are okay with getting your ass whooped up and down the field for 16 games. So I think they're going to compete, especially really early in the season. They're not going to be pushing for a playoff. They're not pushing for a playoff spot. They're not going to be a contender. Like, they're not worried about that. But I do think they want, instead of being 2-14, they would rather be 5-12, 5-11, or 4-12, or 6-10, somewhere in that range.
Okay. What do you think, Ms. Tony? Think same?
Well, I hope they are being competitive, so that would give the Jets a chance to be that number one pick. But, most teams don't go into their season looking to lose. And I'm just hoping that the Jets start 0-16.
Except the Jets.
They're trading players and Richardson, and they're getting a wide receiver. They need a quarterback. To their defense,
they did need a wide receiver, dude. They did. They really did.
Well, they need like 7, so.
Yeah, they really did. I mean, because Iguanuka, when he blew out his knee, that was the one guy that they were depending on to be the number one. So,
right.
Brandon's gone. Decker's gone.
Honestly,
they needed a guy.
The Jets are looking to be the first team to go 0-17.
I hope so. They're gonna
figure out a way to lose on their bye week, guys. Like, they're gonna figure out a way to take an L on their bye week.
I'm gonna tell you.
From listening to the guys talk lately these last week and a half, they not looking to lose anything.
Oh,
that's because you gotta puff your chest when you're talking to the media. Like, if you want to ask Kyle Shanahan right now,
yeah,
San Francisco could win a Super Bowl.
Everybody could win a Super Bowl until you play a game.
The Rams have been telling us for 12 years that they're gonna go better than 8-8. That never happened.
Well, now before we go off the air, I gotta ask you guys 3 questions. And we're going to hit college football real quick. Can Florida State recover from losing Francois?
Yes.
Or was the UCLA game right now the best game of the year so far?
Oh. I don't know, man. That West Virginia Tech game was pretty fun.
I know, yeah. And the Georgia Tech game last night, too.
That Georgia Tech game last night was really good.
The score doesn't
show it, but the Bama-FSU game was really good, too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's up there. I mean, I'd have to give it at least top 3, but, I mean, I don't know. That was an exciting game going back and forth. But right now, I'd probably give it to Tennessee last night.
Okay. And well, Miss Tony, what do you think about the football?
I refer to exactly.
and the third question is, because Alabama, according to my coworker, Alabama only scored 1 offensive touchdown. So my question is, as the third question, can Alabama go undefeated when they may have problems scoring points?
Yes. Because Alabama always figures out a way. Alabama, especially in big games, figures out a way to score a touchdown on the special teams and scores a touchdown on defense. Like, in big games, they always get 7, 10 points, something like that, because of a big, special teams play or a big defensive play. So they don't need their offense at all times to put up, 24 points of offense. They only really need, 17 points. And I think, week one, big saves, you're still getting the rust knocked off. I think they'll be fine. There's a good – I'm not saying they aren't going to go undefeated, because that's really hard to do, especially in the SEC. But I don't think their offensive struggles from week one are going to be indicative of what they are the rest of the year.
More. It's all good.
I think they'll be remain undefeated until towards the end of the season. That last game may be their most competitive game. But we shall see. And I'm not just saying it because that's my home state.
Yeah, I mean, it's week one. You're playing. I mean, you're playing against arguably like the second best team in the nation. So honestly, in that type of game, you shouldn't be able to put up 40 points of offense. Like that shouldn't have been, you know, that shouldn't have been a 42-40 game. That should have been a 21-7 game. So I don't think we're. We should, you know, be too indicative of what their offense looks like and call it like they'll see it.
Okay.
We literally have 2 minutes left, guys. So
okay.
Are you guys watching Thursday
guys
night as the NFL opening?
I'm going to do my best to watch as much of it as I can, but I don't think my work schedule is going to allow me to sit down and just plop down in front of it and watch it. But I don't watch as much of it as I can. But I do plan on doing nothing but sitting in front of a TV Sunday.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Big day.
Yeah, man. So, dude, I really appreciate being back with you guys. Miss y'all, man. You're my people. I don't get to talk shit a lot. I usually just trying to talk shit, you know. And I'm a B. And I wanted to say, right now, while we only got a minute, New England will not repeat. Just putting that out there now. They won't do it.
Nah, I agree with you there. You're not having it.
That's fine. I'll not agree to, even though they're probably the favorites and one of the best teams in the league, but it's just so hard to go back-to-back.
It is,
it's
man.
So hard just to even make it to back-to-back Super Bowls, let alone win back-to-back Super Bowls. So,
I mean, you got to think about it. I mean, let's be clear. The last two times they won, they beat a Seattle team that they should have lost to. And a Falcons team that they should have lost to. So it's not like and all the Super Bowls are close. So I just don't think I think that they're loaded up. I think they're loaded up to repeat, but I just don't think that they will. I just think that, you know, a lot of times when you set up super teams in the NFL, they go down a fiery death.
Ask Vince Young about his dream team in Philadelphia.
I like the way they look, though.
I was talking about a couple of years ago when they had, like, Michael Vick and Jeremy Maclin and Vince Young before the season started said that they were the NFL version of the 92 dream team. And they ended up going, like, 6-10 or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, you know, whenever you try to stack the deck, the NFL guys have a way of
knocking me back down.
Giving you a whole bunch of jokers in your deck.
Vince Young cracking jokes since 2006, baby.
No doubt. So I want to thank you guys again, and thank everybody for listening. Thank you. We're back, baby.
It's good to be home.
Saturday night, guys. Let them know what's going down. Saturday night, we have 30 seconds. Go.
Oh, Saturday night, you got the Chocolito fight. Yo, Chocolito is fighting on HBO. It's the reef. It's the second match between the two guys. I think Chocolito won the first one, but they took it. They stole it from him. He was 45-0, and they stole it. So check it out Saturday night, HBO. I think it's going to be 9 or 10 o'clock. Check your local listings. I'm telling you, it's going to be a barn burner. It's an all-flyweight card. It's going to be crazy.
Okay.
You know, the flyboys throw punches, man. That's all they do all night, throw punches.
So make sure y'all check it out. And we'll be right back Tuesday night at 8 p.m.
Absolutely. And NFL football, college football, it's a beautiful time of the year.
Baseball postseason, don't forget about baseball. If you forget about baseball.
Lots going on in the sports world.
And, Louie, and we need to start doing fantasy. I know we're a little late. Next week we're going to have to get into that.
You're a little late for fantasy draft questions, but, we start week one, it means a whole nother round of injuries and people getting fixed and all that good stuff. So we'll get into, start sits and all that good stuff next week, too.
Absolutely. So make sure y'all tune in.
And Mr. Green,
take
your time, Jack.
Yeah, we got to get Mr. Green up in here.
Yeah, Mr. Green, come on. Come holler at us, baby. So, dude, thank you. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the scoreboard. My name is Mr. Jazz Scoreboard. That is Miss Tony. That's my man, Louie Mack. We're here every Tuesday, 8 o'clock. We did a special hour and a half edition strictly because we've been gone for over a month, but now we're back. We're in our seats. We got our feet kicked up. We're talking that thing, so... Get at us next Tuesday. We'll be here. Hopefully, y'all be here too.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, everybody, for joining us. Like Jazz say, tune back in next Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern time, and we're gonna be talking our talk on all things sports. Good night, everybody.
Good night, baby. Yeah.